And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And it's a great nation that is facing a range of threats abroad. And only belatedly are our politicians making some note of that, at least. There is a devastating editorial today in the Wall Street Journal about President Biden's plans to shrink the military at exactly the wrong time to do that. And at the same time, he wants to shrink the military and increase our taxes. So on the Trump side of things, if President Trump does not intend to increase taxes, how is he going to pay for some of the necessary additional spending in the military? We're going to be speaking about all of those aspects, the many, many new additional taxes that Joe Biden has listed as part of his budgetary must-do items for 2025. We're going to be speaking to Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform about, okay, how will ordinary Americans feel these Biden tax hikes if they actually go through, and how would they impact you and the economy at large? We're also going to be speaking about a more grim and horrific sort of outcome involving a post-war America, and that's assuming that we had in 2034 a devastating war with China that blew up much of the whole world. Okay, so there's a new novel by the same authors, Admiral James Stavridis and Elliot Ackerman. And the new novel is called 2054, and it's about an explosive work of speculative fiction involving AI and the dangers of AI and the remnants of the United States. We're going to be speaking to Admiral Stavridis, who is a four-star admiral, one of the most decorated officers in naval history with considerable combat experience. We're going to be speaking to Admiral Stavridis and his co-author about how acute this current military crisis is and how we have to deal with the deficiencies in our military and our military budget. And then, yes, the issue of aid to Ukraine. There's also continued discussion about Mr. Trump's memory and Mr. Biden's memory. Same thing. And is it the same thing? Or are they treated completely differently on this issue of classified documents? Is this some kind of fraud? Or who lied precisely? And at the hearings yesterday, there were very specific accusations that Robert Hoor, the special prosecutor against President Biden, lied. In any event, the discussion goes on as to whether or not President Biden had trouble remembering his own son. It turns out that he was the one who brought up the death of Beau. And the transcript of his five-hour interview, Biden's five-hour interview with the investigators from the special prosecutor, that interview for 5 hours took place right after, the day after October 7th and October 8th of last year. That was right after the devastating massacre by Hamas against its Israeli neighbors. Oh, and by the way, there's also a piece today that's fascinating about the leading Arab Israeli in the Israeli parliament, who is a proud Arab and a proud Israeli at the same time, who says, no, there's no apartheid in Israel. And he talks about how the two peoples of that part of the world can live together more successfully. We will get to that as well here on the Michael Medved Show. First up, this video from released to the web from Donald Trump celebrating the fact that, along with President Biden, he locked up the nomination last night. Yes, yesterday was Election Day. They even had some caucuses in Hawaii, and basically all the delegates went to either Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Here in the state of Washington, Joe Biden got 86% of the Democratic vote. Trump got 74% of the Republican vote. Now, if that kind of difference holds over to the general election, if Trump only gets 74% of the Republican vote in the general election, he won't win. And obviously the 86% for Biden is more promising. It also reflects the fact that there was no one even vaguely credible running against Joe Biden. And yes, they still had Nikki Haley on the ballot here in Washington. And she got 20% of the vote here in Washington, which is why Trump did so much worse than Biden did. I mean, aside from the fact that Washington State is not on the win list, even prospectively, for President Trump, there's a real chance for our gubernatorial candidate, Dave Reichert, to actually win statewide as a Republican, but that's a different story. A prominent columnist for the Everett Herald here in Washington, Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College. Yeah, same guy who produces this show with me. Jeremy Steiner writes, another Trump-Biden rematch is coming. Sounds like a sequel to a horrible horror film that nobody wants to watch. If you hated it the first time, the second face-off will be worse, weirder, and older. The retread redux, the old versus the odd, coming this November to a nursing home near you. Ouch! Here was President Trump in the video he released to the web, celebrating his now official control of the Republican nomination. Clip 7.
Hello, everyone. It's your favorite president speaking to you on a really great day of victory. 1 week ago, we had something called Super Tuesday, and it was indeed super because we won at numbers that nobody has ever seen before, records in virtually every state. And tonight, likewise. But this one got us over the top. The Republican National Committee has just declared us the official nominee. And so we're the official nominee of the Republican Party, which is a big deal.
Okay, I'm not sure it's entirely official. They're supposed to have a convention where they actually vote at the convention. And as it is, we've been taking attention and significance away from this ritual of political conventions. This takes it to a new high. By the way, the Trump idea that he is winning for the nomination with numbers and with success that nobody else has ever experienced, that's only true if you don't count him as an incumbent. And he has been running very much like an incumbent, what he is promising people. And we're going to be talking to a reporter who has followed him around at rallies and listened to what he has said. And what part of what he is saying is that I'm going to bring America back to what it was like while I was president. But incumbents, including President Obama, President Clinton, even President Bush, won with the same kind of near unanimity when it came to renomination. That's part of what happens with incumbency. We will be right back with the threat to U.S. military resources. Coming up on the Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved show, yes, they're trying to do anything they can to get attention for the other guy running for president, the other guy who isn't 77 years old or older. Yes, of course, Trump is 77, Biden's 81. Robert Kennedy, I believe, is 70, or he might be 69. But he's a second-generation, third-generation politician, actually, in his family. And what people forget is his great-grandfather was mayor of Boston and a congressman, Honey Fitz. That's why it's John Fitzgerald Kennedy. In any event, Robert Francis Kennedy Jr., has announced, are you ready? His vice presidential candidate is going to be disclosed on March 26th. Okay, we have to wait. The announcement of the VP is going to take place in Oakland, California. A media to see this historic moment must register with their name, outlet, title, and phone number. Kennedy's surging support, they say, across the country has made the election a three-way race. A recent Quinnipiac poll shows him leading Presidents Biden and Trump nationwide among voters under 35. Yeah, but guess what? The majority of voters are over 35. So that doesn't mean you're leading, buddy. An NBC poll shows 34% of people saying they could see themselves supporting RFK Jr. Another Quinnipiac poll discussed on CNN shows Kennedy in a three-way tie with Presidents Biden and Trump among Latinos. Okay, if he is sticking to the idea that one of his that his two choices for his running mate position are going to be Aaron Rodgers, who is known for for two things, basically. He's known for being a fading, once great quarterback for Green Bay, and for his objection to vaccines, and particularly to COVID vaccines. And then, of course, there's Jesse Ventura, who's the other possibility. Hard for me to believe that either of these two dignitaries would help with the cause of Kennedy credibility. The idea that he is showing well in polls, I think, shows just how desperate the American people are for someone other than the Democratic choice, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., or the Republican choice, Donald John Trump, your favorite president, as he describes himself. And, there is, in fact, an NFL Network reaction to selection of Aaron Rodgers as one of the two finalists for vice president. The RCP average, their Real Clear Politics average, right now shows Trump at 39%, leading in the presidential race. Biden at 35%, close behind, just outside the margin of error. And Kennedy at 15%, just to put that in context. Now, the 15%, if he holds that with Aaron Rodgers as vice president, if he holds that 15%, he will get in the debates, if there will be any debates, because I am not sure that either Trump or Biden, or maybe both of them, would turn down the opportunity of debating Robert Kennedy Jr. Here is the NFL Network reaction to Aaron Rodgers' prospects as VP.
I will apologize on behalf of all of us for the performance, the communication, the course of the segment. It was probably because right before we came on, I was reading a story about Aaron Rodgers potentially becoming vice president. And, you know, the good news, election's on a Tuesday. That's normally players' day off.
Right.
So he'd be available to watch, you know, the results roll in. There it is. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let's say, all right, go back like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And let's say you just had a mad lib of something I'd be tweeting on the second day of free agency. How about Robert F. Kennedy has recently approached Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers, Jets quarterback, and Jesse the Body Ventura about serving as his running mate on an independent presidential ticket, and both have welcomed the overtures, according to the New York Times. Jesse Ventura, elected Minnesota governor when I was a senior in high school, and all my idiot 18-year-old friends were like, yeah, Jesse the Body, this is funny, let's vote for him. And he won. Wrestler. So don't laugh at the idea of Aaron Rodgers as vice president. This is one of those Costanza driving to the Poconos moments where it's like, I'm really going to go be vice president. Anything can happen, Andrew.
I mean,
back to you, Frenzy. Let's go.
As long as he's not Surgeon General.
Actually, Vice President isn't one of the most powerful posts in the union or in the administration, but it is even more powerful than Surgeon General, especially as that post would be handled by a very well-known anti-vaxxer like Aaron Rodgers, who shares that with Robert Kennedy. The editorial in the Wall Street Journal today, Biden shrinks the U.S. military. And it points out that the president's $850 billion request for the Pentagon in 2025 is a mere 1% increase over 2024. That's a cut after inflation. The fourth in a row that Mr. Biden has proposed. What's happened in the past year? Israel was brutally attacked and is now fighting a war for survival. Iranian proxies have fired drones and rockets at U.S. troops in the region more than 100 times. And its terrorists in Yemen, Iran's, have taken a global shipping lane hostage. Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine is a bloody slog that he could still win. North Korea is ratcheting up its belligerence towards South Korea, which the U.S. is bound to defend. China announced recently a 7.2 increase in defense spending. One recent think tank report estimates Beijing is fielding high-end equipment 5 to 6 times faster than we are. Mr. Biden thinks this is an acceptable moment to put American defenses on a diet, and the administration says it's merely complying with budget caps negotiated last year with Congress. Yet few priorities escaped the axe. The U.S. Army will contract, and not because America is relying less on land forces, which are in high demand in Europe and the Middle East. The Army is asking for 442,300 troops, though the Biden administration requested 485,000 as recently as 2 years ago. The healthier number for the missions required is 500,000. Shrinking the fourth force is no substitute for fixing the underlying problem, which is a struggle to find recruits. That and more. How do you do all this without raising taxes? We'll talk to Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform about the Biden tax hikes he's proposing.
The Michael Medved Show. All across America. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Grover Norquist, who is an American political activist and tax reduction advocate. He is not just a tax reduction advocate. He is arguably the most effective non-elected tax cut advocate we've ever had. I mean, Ronald Reagan deserves a lot of credit here, too, when you're talking about him and his history. Grover has fought against the creeping power of government to take over more and more of our lives through the tax system. And one of the things that he has written about, and it's really very important, and it surprises me that with everything else going on in the world, there's been very little attention to the proposed budget that Joe Biden has put on the table for 2025, which is a budget that includes a gigantic increase in taxes. Grover, can we talk a little bit about what Joe Biden is putting forward for America's future, assuming that he gets reelected? The tax hike would not be reserved for people earning more than $400,000 a year, would it?
No, none of the tax hikes that he has have done that. And we should not only talk about them now, we should talk about them now until the election. This was a suicide note that he wrote for his political career. If we read it, it was a suicide note. The press made a big deal when Walter Mondale said in 1984, I'm going to raise taxes. And it cost him the presidency. And that is exactly, he opens with a $2 trillion tax increase because he wants to not continue the Trump tax cuts. He said that over and over again at Americans for Tax Reform. At our website, we have about 25 of his videoed statements where he says, first thing I'm going to do, day one, going to abolish the whole thing. That's the per child tax credit. That's the faster depreciation expensing for new business investment to make people more productive. It's the taking the business tax, the corporate rate from 35, which Trump did, down to 21. China's at 25. We were paying a higher tax before Trump and the Republicans took over, a higher tax on our businesses that have to compete in the world than China did. China's at 25. Actually, the real industries that matter are at 15 over there, 15. And we were at 35. We weren't competitive. We brought it down to 21, made us more competitive. What does Biden want to do? Take it back up to 32, if you count state and federal taxes together. 32% rate compared to either 15 or 25 at China. We ought to compete in the United States on having a less expensive government. What he wants to compete, he wants an expensive government, high taxes, lots of regulations, and force Americans to compete on wages with China. I don't want to compete on who has the lower wages. I want to have a more efficient government so people can get paid well and compete successfully. Corporate income tax is coming right out of the pockets of workers.
Okay, leaving aside the specifics for just a moment, and I do want to get more into it about what these taxes would mean for the average typical American and American family. We were just talking about the military budget, where what Biden has proposed would actually be a cut if you count inflation. We would cut our funds to the military. We would be unable to build the new naval craft, to have the new resources for space defense that we need. And let alone dealing with the increase that's necessary in just the personnel in the Army. We clearly need to spend more on our national defense, which is the first priority of any government. But how do you do that without getting into an even worse situation than we have now with the national debt? Right now, we are paying more money on debt, on interest on the national debt than we are paying to defend the country. That's kind of askew, don't you think?
It is. It has, to a certain extent, crept up on us. But Biden has put his foot on the accelerator on ramping up the debt. We spend too much money. And Biden's challenge is he doesn't think the government spends too much money. He thinks the American people aren't taxed enough. Defense is a fraction of the total budget. It's maybe 4% of GDP, and the federal government spending is up over 25% of GDP. More recently, even higher than that. So it is a fraction of total spending. It used to be half of the federal budget when I was a kid. That's not been true for some time. So the means-tested programs are half of the federal budget. The transfers are half of the federal budget. We have gotten away from the focus on having national defense to keep the country safe. One of the things mentioned in the Constitution as something that the federal government should be doing, is allowed to do, And if we were, if we could simply get some control over spending, and I would suggest doing what Trump and the Republicans came within one vote of doing when Trump had a Republican majority in the House and Senate, and that was to block grant Medicaid to the 50 states and say, here's your block grant. It's not going to go up any faster than inflation, not going up faster than people's wages, which it is right now. And over time, that saves trillions of dollars, simply limiting the growth. When we did that with Clinton, remember, the Republicans three times voted to block grant welfare, aid to families with dependent children, now called TANF, to the 50 states. The states dropped the cost of aid to families with dependent children by 30% on average, because among other things, they took fraud seriously, because now it was their money. They said you have to do some work, and then some people decided they'd go to work permanently instead of take some welfare. So with that alone, tremendous savings. We should be block granting the welfare programs out to the states so that 50 different states could show us what works and what doesn't. And I'm sorry, but California will be a bad example for the rest of the country, and we'll learn what not to do. And in Iowa and Ohio and other reasonable states, we'll see what works. And that will give California a chance to get better at managing its welfare situation.
Now, you talk here about higher death taxes, and like so many of the other taxes that are listed. And by the way, people, we have linked at our website a paper that you've done on what these taxes really mean and how they function.
Thank you.
And no, it's very important that people understand what these issues are there. Explain why the higher death taxes are not just a problem for the very rich.
What the higher death taxes do is they take capital out of the economy and hand it to the government to squander. That's when people have to sell their farms in order to pay the death tax or break up small businesses. It's devastating to investment in the country, and it's not a good idea. A lot of countries have said, we're not going to do that. I think it's a good idea to get rid of the death tax.
And we had been very close to getting rid of the death tax in the past, but this is all so remarkable when you talk about the average burden. How much does Biden say he's going to raise in additional revenue with all these higher taxes?
Depending, $4.4 trillion, something like that. It's a big number. Depends on, he throws a bunch of stuff up in the air. He wants to take the tax on small businesses, pass-throughs, to 39.6%, almost 40%. He wants our capital gains tax to be twice as high as China's. Because it's not just what the tax is on Americans, it's what is it compared to other countries, because that tells you whether American steel manufacturers, auto manufacturers, farmers can compete in the world or not.
And we want them to be able to compete in the world. Grover Norquist with Americans for Tax Reform. Can find out more material at michaelmedved.com.
More Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved show, there is new news about one of President Trump's many ongoing legal cases. Good news for Trump. The judge in the Georgia election criminal case, the judge has dismissed six counts against Trump and his colleagues in that case. The judge overseeing that election interference case today dismissed some of the charges against former President Donald Trump and others. But the rest of the sweeping racketeering indictment, this is from Fani Willis, who's been having all kinds of problems of her own. Rest of the sweeping racketeering indictment remains intact. The Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee quashed love that word. 6 counts in the indictment, including 3 against Trump, the presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee. But the judge left in place other counts, including 10 counts facing Trump, and said prosecutors could seek a new indictment to try to reinstate the ones he dismissed. Now, of course, there is the other side of this case where Fannie Willis's non-professional behavior, her involvement with a special prosecutor she had hired to handle this case, is all part of the question that people are facing about, okay, is she going to be able to continue to quarterback this entire very elaborate case against Trump and colleagues? But we shall see. The challenge, the problem hasn't disappeared. And nothing involving the back and forth about President Trump will make a difference, particularly for people on the Democratic left who are going to, whether or not President Trump is found guilty or the trials are delayed or anything happens, whatever happens about the charge against Donald Trump, isn't going to swing people like Ilhan Omar. And what's fascinating about this is she has been very, very outspoken as a defender of Hamas and of Arab terrorism and of Islamic terrorism. She herself came on CNN, and she was asked if she is still, given the hostility of so many people who are on the pro-Hamas side of things, if she is still planning to vote for Joe Biden for president. This is clip 5.
If the election were held today, would you vote for Joe Biden? Can you confirm that he would have your vote today?
Of course. Democracy is on the line. We are facing down fascism. And I personally know what my life felt like, having Trump as the president of this country. And I know what it felt like for my constituents and for people around this country and around the world. We have to do everything that we can to make sure that does not happen to our country again.
And do you think your constituents ultimately will come to the same conclusion that you did, you know, the tens of thousands who voted uncommitted as a protest against the president?
Well, the uncommitteds have been very clear. They want a change in policy, and we've seen that. Within 3 days, you had the vice president using the word ceasefire. We now have the president saying there is a red line if Israel goes into Rafah that he is going to condition aid. So there has been a significant progress. I think it is the responsibility of every citizen of this country that cares for the humanity of all to continue to push this administration to do what it can do to end the onslaught that Palestinians are living through every single day.
And of course, what this ignores is the role of Hamas. We had covered at the very end of the show yesterday the reports that had come out of Al-Arabiya, which is another Al Jazeera-like local Middle Eastern Arab politics, politically controlled source of information. They had reported that there was a verge of agreement between Israel and Hamas for a new ceasefire and for progress in releasing hostages. They were going to be releasing 40 hostages. Hamas has turned that down and shot it down entirely. And it's on that basis that Ilhan Omar criticized Jake Sullivan, because he had been honest enough to say that it was Hamas's unwillingness to continue at the table and to even get a 6-week ceasefire, which could make a world of difference in getting humanitarian aid into Gaza. Hamas has decided, no, we'd rather have our people suffer. And here is Ilhan Omar criticizing Jake Sullivan.
Does he have a point?
Well, Hamas showed up to Egypt, is my understanding, for the negotiations. It was Israel that refused to send negotiators to be at the table to carve out. You have to remember that a ceasefire is not something that happens magically. It is a process that is negotiated by different parties that have interest.
And just to, and so I just to be clear, I mean, I just want to make sure I understand.
Jake continues to be an honest broker in this conflict.
Are you suggesting that when he says there's something on the table, a ceasefire that Israel has agreed to, they want those hostages back, Hamas will not agree to that, you don't think that that's where things, you don't believe that that is where things stand today in these negotiations?
Well, there was a current AP reporting that said, you know, negotiators from Hamas arrived in Egypt to negotiate for a ceasefire, and Israel decided not to send anyone down there.
Okay, this is, again, she's basically attacking Israel based on Hamas talking points. Given the fact that the Prime Minister of Israel, the President of the United States, the leaders of NATO, the leaders of all the civilized countries in the world have advocated for a release of hostages that would be, in effect, partially a prisoner exchange. They're talking about releasing men, elderly men, women, children, the people who are most vulnerable, and about 40 of them. And that 40 release of hostages would also mean a release of some imprisoned Palestinian terrorists in Israel, and that would also be a 6-month temporary ceasefire to help with the humanitarian aid. And the opposition to that by Hamas is unjustifiable and undeniable. CNN commentator Scott Jennings reacted to some of the distortions from Ilhan Omar, clip 17.
Say pretty clearly she would support President Biden in November. Some of her colleagues, I'm not sure they would say that today.
No, she's a Democrat. They're going to vote for Biden. I'm not surprised about that. I am surprised that in the year of our Lord, 2024, there is a public relations agent for Hamas sitting in the United States Congress. Mm-hmm. The reason Israel is not at that meeting is because Hamas will not provide a list of the living hostages. I didn't hear a word of concern for the hostages. You know, ceasefire, she said, don't happen magically. Well, you know, there was a ceasefire in place on October the 6th. And who broke it on October the 7th? I cannot believe, honestly, what I heard out of that interview. What I want are for those hostages to come home. And I want somebody out there to show just a little bit of remorse that Hamas broke the ceasefire, raped and murdered horrifically women, all kinds of people. That's it. How about a little bit of concern for those folks? That's what I'm looking for.
The Reuters reports, headline, Gaza hostage deal. Hamas denies agreeing to U.S. proposal for ceasefire. The White House urged Hamas terrorists in Gaza to release women, elderly, and wounded hostages and accept a temporary ceasefire. And we will stay at it, says Jake Sullivan. We are determined to try to generate a ceasefire with the hostages coming out. And may they succeed at that for the sake of Israel, the world, and this greatest nation on God's green earth.